Kelly Clarkson here to let you know it's the holidays at Wayfair, and I'm so excited to share how you can add a little extra magic to your celebrations this season. I love this time of year, y'all. It's always filled with friends and family around the dinner table, holiday traditions, and my favorite, cozy time spent at home. Hosting is such a big thing during the holidays, and Wayfair has the perfect pieces to make your holiday celebrations even more festive and totally your style. To get the holiday Christmas spirit going at my house, we love watching some fun classic Christmas movies, baking in the kitchen together, having some holiday music on. It just makes everything more magical. One thing I love about Wayfair is they have so many options, because each year we like to do something a little different. Look, everyone knows no matter how much preparation you go in for Christmas time, it's so busy. So the free, easy delivery that Wayfair provides is something I really love. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to get your home holiday ready.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Almost 1 in 10 pregnancies in the United States is affected by gestational diabetes, and that's kind of a surprising number, right? But while it might sound scary, the good news is that with the right information and care, women with gestational diabetes most likely will have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 282. Whether it is your first time listening or you've listened before, I am so glad you're spending some time with me today. In this episode, you're going to learn everything you need to know about gestational diabetes. What is it? What causes it? How common is gestational diabetes? What are the potential complications for mom, potential complications for baby because of gestational diabetes? How is it diagnosed? How is it treated, both without medication and with medication? How it affects your pregnancy and your birth management? And then also how it can impact you actually well after you give birth. Tons of great information in this episode, and we're going to get right into it. But one more quick thing, this episode is coming out just before Thanksgiving, and I do want you to know that you should be on the lookout for a fantastic Black Friday sale on the birth preparation course. The best way for you to know about all of the details of the sale is to hop onto my email list at drnicolerankins.com/email. And being on my email list will not only help you to know about the sale, you'll also get a weekly email where I share tips and tricks and nuggets of information. People love the email, and it's the best place to know about any upcoming sales I have in the future. So if you're happy to hear this episode after Black Friday, still hop on that email list. It's drnicolerankins.com/email. It's the best way for us to stay in touch. Okay, let's talk about gestational diabetes. So gestational diabetes, and it's actually gestational diabetes mellitus, GDM, and I'm going to call it GDM throughout the episode, is a condition where carbohydrate intolerance develops during pregnancy. And this is different from type 1 or type 2 diabetes that can occur whether you're pregnant or not. So this is specifically that carbohydrate intolerance that develops during pregnancy. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reports that GDM affects approximately 5-9% of pregnancies in the United States annually. And in 2021, that's the most recent data from the CDC, there was about an 8.3% rate of gestational diabetes among births in 2021. So anywhere from 5-9%, just under 10%. Of pregnancies will be affected by gestational diabetes. And I should say in this episode, I'm talking only about gestational diabetes. I'm not talking about type 1 or type 2 diabetes. So what are some risk factors for developing gestational diabetes? Actually, any woman can develop gestational diabetes, and sometimes people get surprised when they do develop it. But there are some factors that can increase your risk, like having a family history of diabetes, being over age 25, carrying extra weight, so being overweight or obese, of course, having had GDM in a previous pregnancy, and then certain races and ethnicities, like being Black, Hispanic, Native American, or Asian American, can increase your risk of having GDM. However, again, any woman can develop it. And we believe that it is caused by pregnancy hormones that interfere with insulin. Insulin is the hormone that helps your body use sugar for energy. And when the pregnancy hormones interfere with insulin, then that can lead to higher than normal blood sugar levels. Now, we don't know why this affects some people and it doesn't affect other people, but that's the theory. So specifically the placenta, of course, which is the organ that nourishes the baby, it produces a lot of hormones. And one particular hormone, like human placental lactogen, also progesterone to a lesser degree and cortisol, but that HPL, human placental lactogen, can block the action of insulin, and that can lead to what's called insulin resistance. So these hormones make the mother's body less sensitive to insulin, meaning glucose can't be taken up by the cells as effectively, and that leads to higher levels of sugar in the blood. And as the placenta grows throughout pregnancy, it produces more of these hormones, okay? Those levels increase. And that's why GDM typically develops in that late second or early third trimester. And then some women may also just have underlying difficulty with insulin production. Maybe their pancreas is just not able to produce enough insulin to overcome that increased insulin resistance that happens during pregnancy. Some other less defined but other potential contributors to GDM include inflammation. It's suspected that maybe chronic low-grade inflammation may contribute to insulin resistance. We're learning more about how the gut microbiome, that's the collection of organisms that live in our gut, that the composition of the bacteria in the gut may play a role in insulin sensitivity, and then something called epigenetics, which are environmental factors that can influence gene expression that can also potentially affect insulin resistance. Okay, so what are the complications that can happen with GDM? So for moms, women with GDM have a higher risk of developing preeclampsia. Preeclampsia affects roughly 5% of pregnancies in general, and that number can go as high as 11 to 27% for women with GDM. So it can actually go quite a bit higher, and the higher risk is based on how well the blood sugar is controlled. So what I mean by that is if your blood sugar is better controlled, you're going to have a lower risk of preeclampsia. If your blood sugar is not as well controlled, then you're going to have a higher risk of preeclampsia. And I'll talk about why it's so important to control blood sugars in gestational diabetes. When we look at cesarean birth rates, women with GDM do have a higher rate of cesarean birth. The background rate of cesarean in the US is roughly 20 to 30%. Women with GDM, it is roughly around 30%, and in some populations can go as high as 60% if the blood sugar is not well controlled. Again, if blood sugar is not well controlled, that's going to increase your risk of complications. And then one of the biggest risks, and something that we don't appreciate and we don't talk about enough, is that women who have GDM do have an increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes later in life. So if you've been diagnosed with it during pregnancy, then you really need to be screened more closely for diabetes throughout the rest of your life. Research indicates that up to 50% of women with GDM will develop type 2 diabetes within 5 to 10 years after birth. And some studies actually do put that number higher, suggesting that as many as 70% of women may develop type 2 diabetes eventually. And this is thought to happen because GDM may be like the indicator for an underlying predisposition to insulin resistance, and then that can persist even after pregnancy. Also, the body might have a difficult time returning to normal insulin production and sensitivity after the hormonal changes of pregnancy. And then lifestyle factors like weight gain and inactivity can further increase that risk. Women who do need medication to manage their GDM may have a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes later. Also, women who are overweight or obese after pregnancy have an increased risk, and a family history of diabetes can also increase the risk. So if you have some of the things that are going to increase your chances of having diabetes anyway, even outside of pregnancy, those things are going to increase your chances of having it if you're diagnosed with gestational diabetes. Now, I do want you to know that it is not inevitable, okay? It is not inevitable that you will develop type 2 diabetes just because you have GDM. You do need to pay attention, as we all do, to maintaining a healthy weight, eating a balanced diet, getting regular exercise or moving your body on a regular basis, and you just want to be tested for it regularly. So let's talk about the risk for the baby. GDM can have some potential risk for the baby. Probably one of the ones that's most well known is that it can lead to a bigger baby. That's called macrosomia. That's a larger than average size baby based on where you are in pregnancy. That can complicate birth and lead to birth trauma as the baby's being born. It can lead to shoulder dystocia, where the shoulder gets stuck under the pubic bone as the baby's being born. That's a true obstetric emergency and can lead to long-term damage in rare circumstances. GDM also increases the risk of premature birth, of low blood sugar after birth, hypoglycemia, breathing problems, jaundice. There is an increased risk for the baby to have obesity and type 2 diabetes later in life if mom was diagnosed with diabetes. And then there is an increased risk of stillbirth as well, although it's hard to know if that is more related to the high blood sugar levels or the diabetes itself, but there may be an increased risk of stillbirth. And I do want to touch on a moment for why babies can have really low blood sugars after birth. So what happens is insulin does not cross the placenta. However, glucose does cross the placenta. Glucose is what we use for fuel. So if mom's blood sugar levels are elevated and that extra sugar crosses the placenta and gets to the baby, then the baby's blood sugar is going to be elevated. And in order to compensate for that elevated blood sugar, the baby makes higher levels of insulin. Then what happens after birth is that the baby is born and then is cut off from those higher blood sugar levels that were present in mom's blood. And when the baby is cut off from those higher blood sugar levels, but still has that higher level of insulin circulating, that can lead to the baby having really low blood sugars actually after birth. It's not uncommon for babies to have low blood sugar after birth, especially if mom's blood sugars were not well controlled. So let's talk about how we diagnose gestational diabetes. And I'm specifically talking about how we approach it in the US because it's a little bit different in different countries. So of course I'm talking about the US. All pregnant women should be screened for gestational diabetes between 24 and 28 weeks of pregnancy using what's called a laboratory-based screening test that checks blood glucose levels. Now, you may have heard of getting early pregnancy screening for diabetes, like even at the initial visit, but that's actually looking for undiagnosed type 2 diabetes. It's not looking for gestational diabetes. Gestational diabetes screening is specifically between 24 and 28 weeks. In the US, we most commonly use a two-step approach. Step one is called the glucose challenge test. This is a screening test usually done between 24 and 28 weeks. It's not a diagnostic test, it's screening. So you drink a sugary drink. It has 50 grams of glucose specifically, and 1 hour later, your blood sugar is checked. If your blood sugar is above a certain level, and it's going to depend slightly on the lab, usually between 130 and 140, then you move on to step two, okay? One thing to know, and this gets so confusing and doctors get this wrong too, you do not have to be fasting for step one of this test. You do not have to be fasting. You don't have to be fasting, okay? Now, sometimes if the 1 hour test is greater than 200, then we just presume gestational diabetes and we don't even do the two steps, the second step rather. So if it's above 130 or 140 and between, you know, under 200, then we'll go to the second step. Often if it's 200 or above, then we just go straight to saying you have gestational diabetes. Another thing I want to say is don't try to like fool the test or trick the test or beat the test. This isn't something that is a game to try and beat to get out of it. If you have gestational diabetes, you want to know because you want to be able to treat it effectively. And so many people are able to treat it effectively with dietary changes. So don't try to game it. Don't try to trick it. Don't try to alter your diet. Just take the test and manage the results that you get. So if you get the elevated result in step one, then you go to step two. Step two is the oral glucose tolerance test. That's the OGTT. This is a diagnostic test, meaning that it will tell you definitively yes or no, you do or don't have gestational diabetes. This one, you do have to fast, all right? You have to be fasting at least overnight for this test. So you do have to fast. And this one, you drink a more concentrated sugary drink, and this one contains 100 grams of glucose, so twice as much as the initial one. And then once you drink that sugary glucose, your blood sugar is checked at 1, 2, and 3 hours after drinking the solution. If your blood sugar is above a certain threshold, and that's going to depend on the lab, at 2 or more of the time points, then you have gestational diabetes, okay? So most often we do that two-step approach in the US. Now for some people, they can't tolerate all of that high sugar in the glucose drink because it really, really is sugary. For some people, it can cause nausea. It can cause, for some people, vomiting and just kind of gastric irritation. So there are some options, or maybe you don't want to drink the drink, you know, you just don't want to do the test. There are options to evaluate you for gestational diabetes for those who don't tolerate that standard test. One is to do serial glucose monitoring. So what we do in that instance is we do periodic fasting and 1 or 2 hour blood sugars after meal. So either 1 hour or 2 hours after your meal, then we check your blood sugar and also fasting. So that's going to be 4 times a day. If you eat 3 meals and fasting, you're going to check your blood sugar 4 times a day, and you're going to do that every day. And you're going to do logs between 24 and 28 weeks, usually for at least a 2 week period to evaluate your blood sugars. Okay. So, and you're going to do it around the time when we would have normally done the test. So between 24 and 28 weeks. So for a 2 week period, check your blood sugar every day, 4 times a day. If it looks good, then we say you don't have gestational diabetes. And along with that, sometimes we'll do an A1C, a hemoglobin A1C, which is a blood test that gives us an indication of your long-term glucose control over 3 months. So we may do that as well. This approach of checking blood sugars can be really useful for people who've had gastric bypass surgery because it's really hard to tolerate that big glucose load. There have also been discussions of options like candy or a predefined meal or using a soft drink or like jelly beans instead of the glucose solution. These approaches may be better tolerated, but they haven't been validated in large studies. They haven't been endorsed by ACOG, haven't been endorsed by the American Diabetes Association. So those don't give us as accurate or reliable results. Now you may have heard of something called FRESH test, Fresh Test is an alternative to the standard glucose drink that's used in both the glucose challenge test and the oral glucose oral glucose tolerance test. So Fresh Test can be used both in step one, and there's a version for step two of gestational diabetes screening and diagnosis. And what Fresh Test is that it's made with organic ingredients. It doesn't contain any artificial flavors, colors, or preservatives, if that's important to you. It also has lots of different flavors you can choose from. I think the Glucola drink for gestational diabetes is gross. I think orange is probably the best. It comes in orange and cola mostly. But Fresh Test comes in lemonade, fruit punch, orange, and some folks find it more palatable than the glucose drink. It's gluten-free, it's GMO-free, and it is similarly effective in studies to the glucose tolerance test. It's what's called FDA registered. And what FDA registered means is that the company that makes Fresh Tests has registered their facility with the FDA. It doesn't necessarily mean the product itself has been rigorously tested or approved by the FDA. I point that out because companies will often use these, you know, FDA/whatever to give the appearance that it's more certified or more studied. And I'm not saying that the product is bad. I'm not saying that at all. But I just want you to be clear on what it means when it says it's FDA registered. There are some doctor's offices that do carry Fresh Test in stock, but usually you have to order it yourself and it's an out-of-pocket expense, whereas the Glucola would be covered under insurance. And it's about like $20 to $30 when you look on the website and they ship it to your house. You can also potentially get it from a LabCorp facility directly. The company partners with LabCorp to do the test and sometimes stock it. So if there's a LabCorp near you, they may have the Fresh Test there. You just have to pay for it there when you go get the testing done. So LabCorp does offer that Fresh Test as an alternative to the traditional glucose drink for their patients who are undergoing gestational diabetes screening. So why do we even bother with treating GDM? And the short answer is because GDM improves outcomes for mothers and babies, both in the short term and long term. For moms, it can reduce the risk of preeclampsia. If you treat GDM, it can also lower the risk of cesarean birth when GDM is treated. And if it's well treated, it can actually reduce your risk of developing type 2 diabetes in the future. For the baby, treating GDM reduces the risk of macrosomia, which is that larger than average size that can potentially lead to birth injuries or complications. It can reduce the risk of shoulder dystocia, lower the risk of premature birth, reduce the risk of low blood sugar after birth for the baby, reduce the risk of breathing problems, lower the risk of childhood obesity and type 2 diabetes. So basically, treating GDM helps reduce the risk of all of the negative outcomes that can potentially happen as a result of GDM. So let's talk about what do you do to treat GDM. Most commonly, GDM management is going to definitely start with modifying diet, moving your body more, and monitoring your glucose. So definitely those three things are going to be a part of it. And the goal of GDM and managing GDM is, of course, get normal blood glucose levels, but also make sure that you're eating in a way that's providing adequate weight gain for the pregnancy and adequate growth for the baby during the pregnancy. Ideally, you absolutely want to have a consultation with a registered dietitian to develop a personalized nutrition plan for you based on your unique body type and diet when you are diagnosed with gestational diabetes. These days that can be done in person, that can be done virtually, but definitely you want to meet with a dietitian. You also want to try and move your body more. To be honest, we don't have a lot of studies on the effects of exercise in women with GDM, okay? But we have lots of studies showing that exercise impacts diabetes outside of pregnancy. So we can, you know, make an educated guess that it makes sense to move your body during pregnancy to help with GDM. Ideally, something simple, just a walk for 10 or 15 minutes a day can help improve your blood sugar control and just get you moving a little bit and help improve your overall health. So we talked about diet with a dietitian, moving your body. The third tenet is monitoring your blood glucose. So once you begin treatment with GDM, then monitoring your blood sugar is required in order to make sure your blood sugar is under control, okay? Now, there's not great evidence to define the optimal frequency of blood glucose testing, okay? But the best available data that we have, the recommendation is typically going to be daily blood sugar monitoring 4 times a day, once when fasting, and then again after each meal. The after each meal can be done either at 1 hour or 2 hours after the meal. No study has said that one is better than the other. So it's really whatever the doctor's preference or the dietitian's preference is who's monitoring your blood sugars. Now, once your blood sugar is under well control, then we can back down on that monitoring. Typically, we're going to get it down to twice a day. So fasting and then check one at some point during the day after a meal. We do have some target numbers that we're looking for, that fasting number to be below 95, the 1 hour below 140, or the 2 hour below 120. And usually we look at these values like weekly in a log. You need to write them or keep track of them, or you keep track of them in your little glucose monitor. And then we make adjustments based on what those look like. So if medication is not working, so we look at the logs and it looks like there are a lot of high values. And to be honest, it's a bit subjective to determining how many are considered too high. So we look, we make our best educated guess. And if we're saying, hey, diet is not doing it, then we need to go to medication. The best, the most studied medication for treating gestational diabetes in pregnancy, that's redundant. I should just need to say gestational diabetes. So the best medication for treating gestational diabetes is insulin, all right? Insulin, hands down, has been studied for years and years and years and is considered the gold standard for therapy for GDM if nutrition is not working. Insulin does not cross the placenta, and it works very well, just like it does outside of pregnancy, to change glucose levels and get them under good control. So insulin is a hormone that helps our bodies use glucose for energy. And in GDM, the body either doesn't produce enough insulin or doesn't use it effectively. And insulin therapy replaces or supplements your body's insulin. There are several different types of insulin. There's rapid, there's short acting, intermediate acting, long acting, and we'll determine the best type of insulin based on your blood sugar levels. For example, if you only have an elevated fasting value, then we often just do a nighttime dose of a longer acting insulin in order to help with that fasting value. So it's really going to be tailored to what your blood sugar results are. Insulin is an injection under the skin. It's usually given subcutaneously using a syringe, a pen, or for people who have long-standing history of diabetes, a pump. So, but usually it's going to be a syringe or a pen. It does work very well. Doesn't cross the placenta, has a long history of use in pregnancy and being safe. It does require injections, which can be a lot for people. And if you don't manage it carefully, it can really drop your blood sugar as well. Now, for a while, we have been trying oral medications as first line to treat diabetes, specifically metformin or less commonly glipizide, but really insulin is the gold standard. But for some people who can't take insulin or who, you know, they can't do the injections or they don't want to take insulin, then metformin would be the next best choice. And the way metformin works is that it improves insulin sensitivity and helps your body use insulin more effectively. It is taken orally as a pill. It's generally well tolerated. Sometimes you have to escalate the dose slowly. and it may reduce the risk of your baby's blood sugar going low. It does cross the placenta. Studies do suggest that it's generally safe for the baby, but it does cross the placenta. Less frequently, we use something called Gliburide. I honestly can't remember the last time I've seen somebody on Gliburide. It works in a different way. It stimulates the pancreas to produce more insulin. Also taken orally also does cross the placenta, and there is some concern about the long-term safety of Gliburide for the baby. So it's definitely not recommended as a first-line treatment. Okay, let's switch gears and talk about how your pregnancy and birth management may change because you have gestational diabetes. So if you have GDM, then if your blood sugar is not well controlled, then we're going to do more closer monitoring because you're going to have an increased risk of adverse pregnancy outcomes. Usually we're going to start that at around 32 weeks, and that's going to be twice weekly testing with non-stress test, plus probably measuring the amniotic fluid level or something called a BPP or a biophysical profile. We often do that for people who require medication as well. So if you are on insulin, then you'll probably get testing. Some people do it for everybody with GDM, but if your GDM is controlled on diet alone, you don't necessarily need to have this extra testing because studies show that your baby is going to be at a very low risk of having any issues. If we do testing for folks who are not on medication for GDM, then it often starts later. So it may be 34 weeks or 36 weeks as opposed to 32 weeks. Okay, so when we look at timing for delivery, timing for birth, with well-controlled GDM, then on no medication, okay, well-controlled GDM with no medication, then really nothing needs to change. Delivery is recommended between 39 weeks and 40 weeks and 6 days. There is no need for early delivery, no evidence to support routine early delivery and well-controlled GDM that's controlled only with diet. It doesn't improve outcomes, okay? Now, if you have GDM requiring medication, and that is sometimes it's called A2, without medications, it's called A1 GDM, with medication A2 GDM, then we do recommend delivery a little earlier. We recommend delivery by 40 weeks. So sometime between 39 and 40 weeks. And that's because there's a slightly higher risk of complications like a larger baby in stillbirth. Slightly higher enough that we say, okay, if you're on medication, then we recommend getting you delivered by 40 weeks. Now, if you have poorly controlled gestational diabetes or you've developed complications like preeclampsia, then that is going to be individualized based on the specific situation. Sometimes delivery may be recommended earlier than 39 weeks even to minimize the risk to mother and baby and improve the chances of having good outcomes, okay? So that's going to be individualized if blood sugars are not under good control or if there's some signs that the baby is under distress. Another thing that's going to come up is the discussion of cesarean birth with gestational diabetes. Now, because a bigger baby is more common in women with GDM, and because shoulder dystocia is more likely even at any given weight in pregnancies complicated by diabetes because the distribution of fat is different on the baby, often ultrasounds are done in the third trimester in order to try and estimate the fetal weight. Now, the caveat with this is that ultrasound can be quite poor in estimating fetal weight in the third trimester. I do feel like it's getting better, but it can actually be quite off by even up to a couple of pounds. So with that caveat, I'll tell you what the general guidelines are regarding cesarean birth recommendations in GDM. If the baby's estimated fetal weight is less than 4,000 grams, and 4,000 grams is 8 pounds, 13 ounces, then cesarean is not recommended. Okay, so less than 8 pounds, 13 ounces, go forward with a vaginal birth attempt. If the estimated fetal weight is greater than 4,500 grams, that's 9 pounds, 15 ounces, then a cesarean birth is strongly, quote, considered or even recommended because there's a higher chance of shoulder dystocia and other birth injuries above this weight. So above 9 pounds, 15 ounces. Between 4,000 grams and 4,500 grams, it's a discussion. All right. So it's very clear under 4,000 and over 4,500, what the recommendation is. In between there, it's a discussion. It's a shared decision-making process, meaning that you talk about it. It's not that you have to have a cesarean birth. No one can force you to do anything, but your doctor should present the data and their rationale behind making the recommendation if possible. I will say, not if possible, for certain, they should tell you why they're making the recommendation. And I will say that if someone elects to have a try for a vaginal birth and the baby is suspected to be large, generally in that case, we're not going to be super aggressive with Pitocin. It's like either labor happens or it doesn't. All right. Now, speaking of labor, most women with GDM have normal blood sugars during labor. All right. Even if they're on medication, they rarely develop issues where blood sugar goes really high and we need to do like something called insulin drips or anything like that. So we do measure blood sugar during labor, but really that's the only difference is just checking blood sugars compared to someone who doesn't have GDM. And we're going to check them roughly every 4 hours in the early stages of labor and then every 1 to 2 hours in the later stages of labor. And the final thing I want to end with, which is so, so important and what we don't talk about enough, is what happens if you have GDM? What happens postpartum? All right, because this is really, really important. So postpartum, once the placenta is out, then the effects of the placenta on your blood sugar go away, so you can immediately stop any medications and resume a normal diet. Most women will go right back to their pre-pregnancy blood sugar control immediately. But again, over the course of your life, you do have an increased chance of developing diabetes or some type of glucose intolerance. Therefore, we start with screening anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks postpartum for any woman who had gestational diabetes to identify those who went on to develop overt diabetes. This is a 2-hour fasting test and it's a 75 gram load. So slightly different glucose amounts than the other tests during pregnancy. I don't know why they're all different, but they are. So this is a fasting 2-hour test done postpartum. Now, because that can be a little bit of a burden for folks, and a lot of people actually don't go to their postpartum appointments, there's more people looking into in-hospital postpartum testing. So that is testing for overt diabetes in the hospital. Studies are showing some promising results that doing that 2-hour oral glucose test before hospital discharge can effectively identify women who are at a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And the way that that happens is it's typically performed within 24 to 48 hours after birth. You do have to fast for at least 8 hours before the test, and then you do that standard 2-hour test. So it has the convenience of getting it done in the hospital and you'll have that answer sooner, but it's inconvenient a little bit still because you do have to fast and it does take a couple hours to get the results back. You also may have to adjust your breastfeeding in order to make sure that you can fast. So those we're looking into ways in order to get that testing done in the hospital as well. Now, regardless of whether or not you have that testing done at 4 to 12 weeks or in the hospital, everybody should make their primary care doctors aware that they had gestational diabetes because you really need to be tested every 1 to 3 years to make sure that you haven't developed diabetes or if you've developed diabetes to treat it appropriately. All right. So let your primary care physician know so that you can get adequately tested and treated if needed. Okay, just to recap, GDM affects about 7% of pregnancies. All women are tested between 24 and 28 weeks, usually with the two-step method. It's treated first with diet. The next best thing is insulin. And then after that is oral medication. If your GDM is well controlled on diet, we don't need to change when your delivery is. If you require medication, then we recommend by your due date or sooner if there are other issues going on. And postpartum, you need to be checked because there is a high chance that you could develop overt diabetes or type 2 diabetes down the line. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And be sure to be on the lookout for that Black Friday sale. The best way to know about sales to stay in touch with me is to hop on my email list. So grab your spot on my email list at drnicolerankins.com/email. I do not sell the information or anything like that. And I do not email a lot, roughly about once a week. So hop on the email list. It's some great information and conversation there. Again, drnicolerankins.com/email. So that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.